Fourth and final hour, Darren, Donick, and Jace on this Monday afternoon. We're live here at Pete and Terry's Tavern, next door, Bridgestone Arena. Predators and Maple Leafs tonight here in Bridgestone Arena. I will have a pregame for you starting at 6 o'clock, puck drop at 7, everything heard right here on 102.5 The Game. Let's head west. Let's check in Memphis. Eric Hasseltine is the fine play-by-play voice on radio for the Grizzlies. He now joins us. Eric, how you doing?
I'm great. I'd be better if I was getting ready to go to the Preds game like you guys. I'd love to be up there right now.
It is going to be a fun night in the building. Both teams are coming back from their break, and there's going to be a lot of hockey the rest of the way. So Predators have played the least amount of games thus far in the league, so they're going to have to do some making up, and the schedule's going to get compact the rest of the way. You know all about an 82-game schedule, so you know all about that.
Yeah, it's weird how that works out in both leagues, huh? Where, like, some teams have played more and the other teams have played fewer. Like, I think I looked at our schedule, and we had played some of the most games early on, too. And so it was it's weird how that works sometimes. But in the end, you all play 82, and you all end on the same day, right?
Well, no doubt about it. Last night, you guys were at the FedEx Forum. The Grizzlies were hosting the Suns, and I, you know, let's just start with, where were you when you found out the news, and what was your reaction?
To be honest, I mean, I can tell you exactly where I was. Just standing in my bathroom. I had my 8-year-old with me, my son. We had just finished up playing catch on the front yard. He's getting ready for his baseball season to come around, and I want to make sure he's as ready to go as possible. So we've been throwing the ball around, swinging the bat, and, you know, trying to have that time with him during the basketball season. It's really special to me. So I had kind of gotten him ready to go to the game with me, and I was in my bathroom getting ready, and we have a group text amongst those of us that work with the Grizzlies, and one of the PR directors sent the TMZ story, and the first thought was, please let this just be someone who's got incredibly poor taste a night after LeBron James passed Kobe on the scoring list, albeit in Philadelphia, and that this is completely inaccurate. And I think that was every man in that and woman in that text thread's reaction, like, please let this not be true. And unfortunately, we all know now that it was true. And we all know that we all kind of dug in and found out that that was the case. My first reaction to it, guys, was to call my friends that are in the Laker organization, people that had been there that are no longer there. And one of them in Southern California expressed to me that he was shocked that they allowed the helicopter to even take off, that it had been a really foggy day. And so it was really hard. And I didn't know Kobe personally. I had some interactions with him, but I had a tremendous amount of respect for the player he was and for the, you know, for what he did to revamp his image after a very difficult time in his own personal life years ago, as we all know, and to become the father that he had become. I was impressed. And so the second thought I had was, I really hope this doesn't get worse before it gets better. And it gets better with sharing memories and healing talks with people. It gets worse if you find out there were more people involved. And as we all know, it unfortunately got worse.
For all the teams that had to play yesterday, there's no planning. And, you know, it's something that's got to be put together pretty much on the fly or pretty quickly. I thought it was nice to look around the league and see the tributes that were going on from players, coaches, play-by-play guys like yourself, just, you know, people out there. You had to work that night. It's, you know, you get hit with this, and now you have to figure out a way to work that in. What took place, since we're talking to you, what took place at FedEx last night around the news?
Well, I arrived at the arena, as I typically do, about 2.5 hours prior to the game, and got to the spot where Coach Jenkins, our new head coach, does his pregame media availability. Our television crew goes first, and then our media scrum for all the rest of the media, and then I get to talk to Coach Jenkins solo for our pregame interview. Walking through the arena, I ran into our television play-by-play voice, Pete Pranica. We just kind of shook our heads, and, you know, basically I asked, okay, what's your guys' plan? Because I had formulated –
on the drive in what I thought we should do, but I needed to clear it with everybody and make sure. And my thought was, ask Coach Jenkins prior to the interview beginning, like, how do you want to handle this? Do you want to focus on the game? Do you want to say something? When do you want to say it? Let him tell me what was best for him. For our pregame interviews, we have a segment we call Grizz Files, where we kind of dive in like an in-your-own-word segment with our players, coaches, some legends like we just had in town. And we scrapped that, and I had Brevin Knight, who's our television analyst who played in the league, and Elliot Perry, who's our radio analyst who played in the league, come on for about 2 minutes and talked with them basically back-to-back about their memories and their experiences with Kobe from a player's perspective. While I was in with Coach Jenkins, both teams were communicating through the locker room to figure out what they wanted to do. We had all seen what happened in San Antonio, which was amazing. And the Suns and Grizzlies came up with the idea that since he wore two numbers and they happened to be 24, the amount of seconds in the shot clock, and 8, the amount of seconds you have to get it across the timeline, that whoever won the tap would take a 24-second violation, and the team that got the ball off the turnover would then reciprocate with an 8-second violation. So I thought that was incredibly thoughtful and a wonderful tribute. And our coach said, I would rather just address it right away. And then, you know, our players were hurting, so we kind of let them be. And they did that in San Antonio, and we agreed to all do that as well. So it was hard. I'm the first one to tell you, I don't deal with these things real well. I kind of wear my emotions on my sleeve, and even though it's not somebody I knew really intensely, I did know him a little bit and had interactions with him. My favorite story about that is that was one of the last buildings where we sat courtside. And so for, you know, the 15 years I've done this, up until he retired, it was 11 seasons where he would walk right by me. And I had a stats guy that lives in L.A. that's a good friend of mine, and he would do my in-game stats for Laker games. And Kobe would fist bump the 4 courtside ticket holders next to us. He would skip us and then fist bump the rest of the table. And every time, my stat guy would hold out his fist, and Kobe would look at him and kind of sneer and snarl and walk by, because you were on the opposition. And the last year he played, in the last game that we were there, he fist bumped the guy and gave him a wink, like, I have seen you for years, and I'm going to do this. And I thought that was just an incredible, incredibly funny, yet, you know, just touching thing to say. Hey, I competed against you, and for years I wasn't going to give you the time of day, but, you know, now that I'm walking out the door, I appreciate that you wanted to, you know, that you wanted to fist bump me because of what I've done. And so I started formulating stories like that and trying to just figure out a way to kind of hold it together as best we could, and then get to what we had to do, which was play the game. And I thought it was incredibly ironic that there were 8 games on the schedule, and that, you know, you add up all these numbers, guys that were close to him, Trevor Booker and Trae Young combined for 81 points. They each took 24 shots. I mean, these are just these things that just happen that are so coincidental and just bizarre. But, you know, someone asked me if I thought the league should cancel the games. And I said, the last thing in my mind that I would think Kobe Bryant would have wanted was people to stop doing what he loved to do. And then you factor in having to cancel 8 games and make those back up. And it was just on the fly. It would have been so difficult for the league to do that moving forward. And I thought all the coaches handled it brilliantly by giving a lot of players the option. If you cannot do this, and we understand everybody deals with grief differently, then, you know, you can sit out. No one will question it. No one will judge it. But I think I think Kyrie sat out, but to a man, most guys played. Devin Booker was in tears before the game in our game. And that guy is as tough and as mean and as nasty a trash talker as I've seen. And this guy was just broken down, and he came out and had a hell of a game. And so, you know, I know I'm kind of rambling because I'm trying to think of the right thing to say, and I just don't think there ever is a right thing to say in this moment. This was not something anybody expected. And I think it's crazy. I've been hearing all the comparisons to when Prince passed away and when Michael Jackson passed away. I think we have a stronger connection to athletes because of the television coverage of when they perform. We don't see musicians' concerts. And when we go to a concert, we can't get that close. You can get so close to professional athletes, hockey players, baseball players, basketball and football, that you almost feel like you know them. I was a huge fan of the band Rush. I had no idea that Neil Peart had brain cancer or that was battling any illness whatsoever, but I loved his music. I didn't feel that connection. I didn't know Kobe Bryant all that well other than to have interviewed him a couple of times in scrums, but I felt a connection to him because you could see him and reach out and touch him more so than a musician. So to me, it seems like that's why this resonates so deeply. And this was a guy who possessed every quality of what you need to have to be great, a fearlessness, a mentality of hard work, and a dedication to his craft that exceeded just about everybody else's.
Eric Hasseltine is the radio voice of the Memphis Grizzlies. We're reflecting on the death of Kobe Bryant. And Eric, if my timeline's right, I can remember when the Grizzlies first became a good team with Jerry West and
yeah.
Some of the, that's when Kobe was in his prime. What was it like when he would come through town? Like, what was it different? Like, it's always different when the great ones come through, yeah. Right?
Yeah, I mean, if we're going to be honest, it was maddening because you showed up to your building and there were, you know, Laker-clad fans everywhere. They're not always the most polite of human beings. They like to let you know how many championships they've won. And they would buy up tickets. It's a lot like you guys have seen with the bell cow franchises in every sport, whether it's the NHL or, you know, I think there's more territorialism in the National Hockey League from what I've seen, the arenas I've been in. But you go to an NFL game and when it's a Steelers or Cowboys game and there's fans everywhere. And then on top of that, this guy was going out to embarrass your team and do everything he could to embarrass your team. And there were just times I remember calling games where the Grizzlies were riding a wave of emotion or just, you know, absolutely playing at another level because of the intensity brought by playing not only the Lakers but Kobe. And then you would just almost see this twitch in him, like a switch just went on. And he said, okay, I've had enough of this. Now I'm going to show you what greatness is all about. And you just kind of in your head just went, here we go. Here comes Kobe. And, you know, from dropping 60 on the Grizzlies in three quarters to a game in L.A. where he was so angry that Mike Miller had blocked his shot and that he didn't get a foul and that he ended up literally throat-chopping Mike Miller, to which he apologized for after the game. But the intensity. And so when you got ready for those games, I have my own way of doing my charts, and I do in each individual players, and I would just always roll my eyes at the numbers and how good the guy was. And you'd look at him, and you're like, how is this guy? He's not physically imposing like LeBron James. Yes, he could jump out of the gym when he was 18, 20. You know, he had those special athletic gifts, but not like other guys did, per se. He wasn't the fastest guy, but you'd see him jab step and fade away, and that ball would float in the air, and you had no doubt that it was going in. And when it went and it didn't go in, it almost left you speechless. So it was hard because you knew you were in for a really long night. And even when they didn't have great players around him at the end, you knew if Kobe got into that Kobe mode, and it wouldn't come as often as it did when he was in his late 20s, early 30s, but it still could come, and you were in trouble. And there was just nothing you could do. And so, you know, you look at his numbers, and the thing that popped out to me, guys, is this guy only won one MVP, and he could have won, in my opinion, at least five, if not eight or nine, the years he had. There were just other great stars there. But the whole time, I don't ever recall hearing him complain about that. I don't ever recall hearing him, you know, go to the press and go, this is ridiculous, I should be the MVP. He would just quietly say, okay, well, you're just giving me more reason to go back in the gym and work even harder. You're just giving me more opportunity to prove you guys wrong when I do win one, or when I win number two, or when I win another championship. Oh, you think I can't win a title without Shaquille O'Neal? Let's go find out. You know, even at a point where he admitted that he was frustrated and he thought about being traded from the Lakers, which he said took a lot for him to admit, when they went and made a deal, he said, all right, then let me lead these guys and see what we can do. I think we haven't seen a lot of competitors like that in our lifetime. I think you talk about the Michael Jordans, the Kobe Bryants, even the Larry Birds, guys like that, the Magic Johnsons. They had that competitive drive. A lot of people have criticized LeBron for not having it. I think he does have it. I just think he expresses it differently. And the stories are legendary of rookies coming into the Lakers and going, hey, I want to work out with you, Kobe. I want to be with you, you know, on a day-to-day basis, teach me the ropes. And he would look at him and say, I don't think you want to do that. I don't think that that's what you're about. I don't think you want to get to the gym at 5 a.m., and it's nothing against you, but I'm not here to go work out for 2 hours and then on an off day go down to the beach and try to pick up girls. I'm going to stay in the gym until I literally can't shoot anymore, and I feel like I'm wiped out. I've given everything I have, and then I might go back later and try to do it again. He was, you know, fairly reclusive from what I heard at times, and he was a guy that you know, I think he liked the spotlight, but I think he also liked time away. I mean, some of the most notable stories in Memphis are of him going to St. Jude without any fanfare whatsoever, going to visit kids stricken with life-threatening diseases and just being there because when he walked in a room, it stopped. I mean, you're like, oh, my gosh, there's Kobe Bryant. And that, for a kid that's going through that, could mean the world. And he didn't want people to, you know, pat him on the back for doing that. He just felt like if he could help, he would do it. And I had a lot of respect for that.
Eric Hasseltine is with us, radio voice for the Memphis Grizzlies here in Darren Dunick and Chase. And we started this off, Eric, talking about tributes that, you know, you guys did there in Memphis and other teams, and we know more will be coming. But when you look at legacy and how you honor him forever and ever, how would you do it? Do you retire his number across the league? I mean, that's been a debate with Jordan on whether it should be done. What do you think the proper way to honor Kobe Bryant moving forward will be?
See, and that's a really tough question, and I may sound a little hard or calloused about this when I come up with my answer. I think Major League Baseball retiring the number 42, we all know why. What Jackie Robinson went through makes all of us cringe and think back and just go, how could we be so stupid? And as great as Kobe was, that's not what he went through. As great as Michael was, that's not what they went through. And to me, those guys would want their jerseys, I think, retired by their teams, but not by the whole league. I mean, yeah, it's an ultimate sign of respect, but, you know, those guys value the next generation carrying the torch and taking the league a step ahead of where they were, the way they did. I mean, we haven't retired Bill Russell's number 6. If we start retiring the all-time greats throughout, I mean, what's next? And then we're going to retire 23, and LeBron, who's it going to be for, LeBron or Michael? I think the individual teams do that, and I know there's a reporter up there that had a big issue with something about the Grizzlies retiring Zach Randolph, to which I said, well, you know, to us in Memphis, that's a guy who we don't want to see somebody else wear number 50. Number 50 to us in a Grizzly uniform will always be Zach Randolph. And the numbers he put up and the things he helped this team do didn't necessarily result in championships, but that's important to us. The number 9 is important to us for Tony Allen. Just like in San Antonio, Avery Johnson's never going in the Hall of Fame, but he's number 6 is hanging in the rafters of the San Antonio Spurs. And he didn't even play his whole career there. But he meant that much to that group. And Bruce Bowen the same way. So to me, I always think it's a team-based thing. I think I would rather see guys like that, especially in the situation where the life is lost tragically, just every arena either have a KB, a 2-4 up there, but you still wear the numbers and move forward with the thought that I believe Kobe would like to see people carry on the legacy of his number, not necessarily in Los Angeles where he has 2 retired, but for other teams, you know, to be a kid, if you were a kid and saw the highlights and, you know, the guys in the league right now, this was their guy. You know, I look at our average age of 24. They were at that average age would have been 11, 12 when he was right in the prime of it and when he was killing people. And these are the guys that at 11, 12 years old saw Kobe Bryant probably said, hey, I want to do that. You know, you don't get that when you're 8, 9, 10. You may love the game, but you don't really have that grasp of who the players are. Until you're, I think, into your 10, 11, 12, that's where, as much as I love Dr. J, that's where I didn't really realize how great he was until I was 10 or 11, and then I saw highlights and where he was still playing at that time, and then Michael Jordan came along right after. But, you know, these guys, that's their guy. The next generation is going to be LeBron. But the thing these guys have now is they have the ability to go back and watch the old highlights, unlike we did when we were growing up, or we did not have that chance. And so I think there's probably some 6-year-old kid that today his dad is showing him the highlights of Kobe dropping 81 on the Toronto Raptors. And maybe he goes and wears a youth basketball 24 and wears it for the rest of his basketball playing career and ends up being the number one recruit in the country, and then you're going to get him to the NBA and say, oh, by the way, the guy that inspired you, you can't wear that number anymore. I don't necessarily agree with that.
I know you guys have a big game tomorrow night. You're hosting the Nuggets, but it'll be very interesting to see in the nightcap, the last game in the NBA tomorrow night at the Staples Center, Lakers and Clippers. So you know a lot of eyes will be on the Staples Center tomorrow night. Eric, good to talk to you as always. Thanks for doing this, and we'll talk to you down the road.
Guys, anytime. Enjoy the Preds game. Good to see them back on the ice. And, yeah, tomorrow night certainly in L.A. going to be very, very interesting, and we'll talk soon. Thanks for having me.
No doubt about it. Eric Haseltine is the play-by-play voice for the Grizzlies on radio, and we do appreciate him joining us. There is big news out of Los Angeles that's not involving basketball. It's actually on the football side of things and a quarterback. We'll tell you about what we're talking about on the other side. Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game.